Hello, and welcome to the Changemakers podcast. I'm Dave Corlett, Business Director at the creative agency ShapeBuy, and in this series, I chat to leading marketers at what we call Changemaker Brands, businesses on a mission to change the world for the better through technology. What I want to find out is the role that creativity plays in helping them to communicate the benefits of their technology. Hopefully their insights, experience and stories can help you supercharge your own creativity. And before we get into this one, I just want to say a really huge and heartfelt thanks to every single one of you who's listened and subscribed so far. I hope you've enjoyed the journey that we've been on. I hope you've enjoyed the episodes we've put together so far, because it's wonderful to have you with us. So thank you very much for your time. And also, I hope you continue enjoying the podcast as well, because we've got some fantastic episodes and guests lined up over the next few weeks and months. None more so than my guest this week. Frida RMB is the CMO of GetAccept, which is a digital sales room platform. And like many of our guests, Frida came to my attention through her profile on LinkedIn. She posts about a range of things in relation to B2B and SaaS marketing, one of which more recently was all about the thorny and sometimes contentious issue of personas. Some people love them, some people hate them, some people really want to put some compelling ones together but don't exactly know where to start. And if that's you, I think you'll find this episode super interesting, because it's exactly what we dive into. Hello, Frida. Welcome to the Changemakers. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well. It's fantastic to have you. There's a lot I want to talk about around all sorts of different things. But first of all, what would be great is if you could give our listeners a bit of an insight into your journey to where you are today. As CMO of GetAccept, right back from your early days, I believe you started out in account management and BD. Is that right?
Yes, I did. I think... sales has always been in my life, a passion of mine, or a very big interest at least. I had a mother who ran her own business, so she was the sales manager or the sales agent for many clothing brands, actually, for the Swedish market. So I grew up with her, constantly working with different customers, going with her to all these kind of fashion fairs and sitting with her at the table with her customers, helping her writing in the order books and, counting pieces and summing up. And so that has always been, sales has definitely been something that came early to me and something that I found, it felt quite natural for me to sort of, go into sales right after university. So what I did when I was through university was that I actually joined a company called Hopplun. It's not a well-known brand at all, but what they do is that they produce white label clothing collections for big store chains all over the world. So companies like H&M or Calvin Klein, or you name any big store chain out there, they buy from this kind of companies and they put their labels into their clothing lines. So I was responsible for sales towards these big accounts in the Nordics and in the Baltics. So that was sort of my first sales job and my first step into account management right after university. And then after 2 years' time, when I'd been at that company for 2 years, I felt that I wanted to, continue within sales, but maybe do more of complex B2B sales. If I look back at what I did study at university, I did have a degree in business administration and actually computer science. Nobody believes that, but I did, or I do. So to me, it felt quite natural to move into telco, the telco industry, which I did. So I took a step from the clothing industry to the telecommunications industry. And I also remember that people back then sort of asked me, how can you make this step, from one industry to a totally different industry? But to me, it made total sense. It was still sales, it was still account management, and new products or a new product portfolio, you can always learn. It takes a bit of study, but you can always learn that, and you and then you can just apply your sales and your account management skills on that new industry. So I started at a company called Telia, which to people within the Nordics is quite known. It's one of the bigger, or the biggest, I would say, telco providers in the Nordics. And I spent quite many years at Telia. So starting within sales, did that for 4 years, maybe, or something like that, 4 or 5 years. And then that took me to product management, and it took me further on to business development. And the last years at Telia, I did actually touching upon the SaaS industry for the first time, because I was part of the global business area who set out to build a brand new business area within Telia. So building up a portfolio of SaaS services to Telia's SMB customers. And I was responsible for sales and marketing within that business area. So quite many different roles within the same company, but very, very valuable and very insightful, I would say.
I was just going to say, so at Telia, were you encouraged to move around different roles to kind of land on more on the marketing side, or was that something you wanted to do by choice, to move slightly away from the sales side and into the marketing side? Because I hear that a lot of those kind of businesses, it's actively encouraged for folks to kind of experience different sides of the business. And how, I guess, how did that affect your kind of future plans to become a marketer?
Good question. I would say it depended a little bit on the manager you had, because obviously you change managers all the time when you change roles, and also reorganizations happened constantly in big organizations like this. So yes, I would say that we were encouraged to try out new roles. But one thing that I experienced was that when you're in a big company like that, there's always, you know, core businesses. And for a telco provider, of course, core business means mobile broadband, or it means, mobile telecommunication. But then obviously they also have these new business areas where they try to find new revenue streams. And I was always interested in going into these smaller areas that didn't necessarily generate the most revenue at that point, because obviously you have to start somewhere. But to me, that was more interesting than being responsible for a big P&L business area. So I would say that, yes, I was encouraged to change roles within the organization, but it was more me who sort of tried to find these other paths within the company, because I was always curious about the new business areas and the next thing, and not necessarily the bigger thing at that moment within the company, but actually what would be the next chapter.
And speaking of next big things, you're now at GetAccept, a startup. Am I right in saying I could still call you a startup?
I would call us a scale-up.
A scale-up. Yeah,
We're actually. But I mean, it depends. We're actually passing 190 employees right now. So I joined 2.5 years ago back in 2019, and we were maybe 70 people ish back then, and now we are 190. So we're growing rapidly year over year. We are in we have offices in 6 different markets: US, France, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, UK, and then obviously we have customers in many, many more markets than that. So yes, I've been here for 2.5 years, and I've When I joined, we had a marketing team of 3 people, and now we are a team of 25. So I have been growing and scaling the team, very focused on that since I joined.
Nice. Would I be right in saying that in terms of being a digital sales room platform, is that a category that you guys invented? Was that category around before GetAccept came along?
No. Super good questions. We have actually been, ever since we were founded back in 2015, we have almost been, you know, searching for the category where we believe that we belong fully, and we haven't really nailed it. We have been part of, you know, proposal management category, e-signature category, contract management, you know, you name it, maybe 6-7 different categories. And it was only until last year when G2 decided to launch this brand new category called Digital Sales Room that we felt that, you know, that's us. This is the category where we belong. They have all the things that we actually offer on our platform. And we were actually part, or we took part in discussions with G2 to actually form this category and what would, you know, frame the category. It was last September, I think, that they launched it. And now, obviously, we are doing, as always, when there's a new category and nobody really knows anything about it, you have to put a lot of efforts into nailing that position and talking a lot about it and getting the word out to the market and creating lots of content and activities around it.
Nice. And have you done anything like this before in your career in terms of, you know, educating customers? I mean, you mentioned at Talia that, you know, you wanted to be focused on kind of on the next big thing or new things coming along. Mm-hmm. Is this a new thing for you in terms of educating customers about and prospective customers about new category like this?
I would say it's the first time I'm part of creating a category fully from scratch, definitely. But then
must be fun.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and I mean, it's I learn every day, and you know, we don't know how to do it. We've never done it before, but obviously we try to ask people, gain as much insights that we possibly can, and then just do it, and we learn along the way, and then we have to adjust and change and try again. But it's extremely, it's fascinating and it's interesting, and it's a lot of fun along the way.
I bet. And listen, speaking of, well, something along similar lines is something that I guess, from my point of view, kind of prompted this discussion, which was a post that you shared about a month or so ago. Fantastic post about the way in which you guys completely reworked your customer personas. I really wanted to delve into this in this conversation because it's persona work is something that's always fascinated me. The depth in which you go to, the extent to which you focus on really, really relevant insights as opposed to, you know, this particular persona prefers Merlot to Shiraz and has a cat called, you know, Stephen or something like that. You know, there's ways in which you can really nail your personas in a hyper-relevant way. And it seems like you guys have really done that. So I just really wanted to kind of to talk about that with you. And I guess what made you embark on this project to rework them so extensively at this point?
I think it's, you know, to be honest, I have never really been a big fan of personas. Maybe it's because I don't have a, you know, traditional marketing background, and I've always thought that personas have been, just as you said, a bit fluffy, you know, made up of information that doesn't really matter. And I've also thought that if you just understand the customer base from a revenue perspective, that would give us enough input, or the customer base from a value segmentation perspective, that would give us enough information to run activities on. But then I realized that obviously that is just one view of looking at it, and it doesn't really say anything about, you know, who the customer really is, what triggers them, what's the challenge that they have, what keeps them up at night, and how should we communicate to really, really truthfully reach them. So I think that was one side of it. The other side was more connected to the fact that both the marketing team, as I mentioned, was growing so rapidly, and I was constantly getting questions about, you know, who are we talking to? Who's the audience? I don't understand the ICP. I don't know what to say. And also connected to what I also mentioned, the fact that we were belonging to so many different categories, trying to sort of find our place. It was many times we ended up in confusion and difficult for me to give a clear direction. And then also the third thing, that I was realizing that since we didn't have a clear set of personas, you know, marketing made up one way to communicate towards a certain target audience, and product have other, and sales have a third version. So to me, those three things together made me realize, okay, you know, we need to do something here. And also when we decided to let's do something here, to me the only thing that matters then is of course to do it really well thought through and base it on real data and insights. And I was also talking to my CEO, and he was a little bit, you know, okay, are you going to do this persona project? Don't come to me with, you know, shoe size, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to hear anything about that. I'm like, you're not going to see that on the persona cards, I promise. So that's how the project came to be. And then, it was a huge project.
Could you give a bit of an insight into how, so obviously massive project. Could you give a bit of an insight into how you went about it?
So what we did was that we started off with a survey towards our ICP, so more towards like the industry that we were targeting, a certain size of companies that we were targeting, and a certain decision maker, you could say, that we were targeting. So we sent out a survey to about 400 companies, and not definitely not our own customers, so just random companies, and we asked them questions like their purchasing behavior. How many people do you involve in a decision when you're purchasing something? How do you prefer interacting with vendors? How do you gather information? What challenges do you have, etc., etc., etc.? And from that, we just obviously got a lot of data that we could then segment and filter to try to see different patterns in that data. And then what we did on top of that was that we looked at our own customer base, and we picked like 20 customers, and we did in-depth interviews with them. So 90-minute long interviews where we also first, we more or less validated the data we got from the survey, and we asked them questions on their perspectives on, you know, channels that they use to find information. What kind of information are you looking for? What's your pain points? How come you actually decided to buy from us? What tipped you over? All these kind of questions. And then we also, as a third step, talked internally with our sales, with product, with customer success, and also internally with marketing, the marketing teams, to sort of both get the insights from their perspectives, but also once again trying to validate what we saw from the interviews and from the surveys.
Nice. And so what was the average shoe size, just out of interest? No, I'm just kidding. One thing I was going to ask you was, did you learn anything particularly surprising about your ICP that you never knew before?
I mean, obviously we learned a lot. I think there were a couple of things that stood out to me that, you know, I might have had a gut feeling about that, but it was very clearly when we saw it in the data. So one of the things was the importance of an emotional connection to the brand of the vendor that you were looking to buy from. Stood out from our personas was that they valued a close relationship to the company and the brand. That was one thing that we, you know, realized, okay, then we're doing, because obviously we put a lot of efforts into building our brand and you know, communicating our brand, and it felt like, okay, good, then we're doing that right. I think the other thing was maybe the channels that they use. You know, obviously they use a lot of different networks, both there's a lot of new formal networks that have popped up, such as, you know, Rev Genius or Pavilion or networks like that, that also came a lot, that they were looking to, you know, validate suppliers through these networks, but also informal networks, you know, groups of other business executives that they were talking to regular on a regular basis to also validate. Podcasts came up many times, that many of them listen to a lot of podcasts nowadays to actually both get information but also you know, being inspired and so forth. And then if you, I mean, LinkedIn, obviously that's no surprise, a channel that they use, but then TikTok came up, which I thought was a little bit more surprising, and something that we have been talking a lot about recently, like, should we be on TikTok? Obviously, our target audience is there to a bigger extent than we thought. What else? I think the brand part was one of the most interesting part for us, like brand affinity. One of our persona is a younger sales reps, like a young professional, and we could see that brand connection to the brand was especially important for this kind of persona, that they could almost think about the supplier in terms of, is this a company that I would like to work at? Okay, then I also think that they're interesting as a supplier.
That's really interesting. Really interesting, because I on the podcast and through other conversations that I have with, you know, with marketeers, particularly at B2B technology companies, they find it such a challenge to, well, I guess in some senses, to convince their CFOs and their board that they need to invest in brand, and to get the relevant budgets to be able to do that, but also just on a general level in terms of the fact that it's slightly less easier to measure. You know, obviously there's so much pressure on marketing teams, certainly within SaaS and technology companies, to act as the kind of the precursor to the sales team, which means you're focusing more on lead generation and demand generation, which makes it harder to kind of have the brand conversation. Do you feel like now that you've kind of almost got validation for the fact that brand is so valued within your audience, that makes it easier to have those conversations about budgets and about resource and about things like that, that really kind of help to build your brand with your CEO and with your senior team?
Yeah, it definitely, you know, makes me more confident in the fact that that is the way we need to do it. I mean, I've always believed that, you know, brand creates demand and so forth. But obviously, when you have investors on the other side of the table, or you have your CFO or you have your CEO, you always have to, you know, show proof of evidence that, yes, this is really building our pipeline at the end. So I do think, I mean, it's also almost like a trend nowadays that we talk so much about brand building demand. So I think it's almost becoming, yeah, I feel that I don't have to prove it as much, because there's more evidence out there, and you can prove that it actually gives something in the end. And there's also ways to measure it that didn't really exist before. But then it still comes back to the fact that, I mean, take us as an example. We have a super ambitious growth agenda, obviously. So I couldn't put all my efforts and all my budget into brand awareness activities, because it would be top funnel. And it would take some time before that actually showed in the pipe. So there always has to be a balance, like focus short term, show result here. And the more result you show here short term, the more you can also focus in combination on the brand building and the more long term game. and then constantly building the proof with numbers so that you can more or less continue building both parts.
Absolutely. Yeah, makes complete sense. And just back to these personas, how long do you think that they're going to kind of to last before you'll essentially need to look at them again? Do you have a viewpoint on that?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, they obviously it's living materia, so we will definitely need to revisit them again, and we will do small tweaks and add-ons and changes to them already this year, I would say. You know, what we came to was 6 personas, and I'm sure there's people out there that would say, oh, that's way too many. But we have 4 primary personas, and then we have 2 secondary personas. So one thing that we might land in a couple of months' time is that, you know, the secondary personas might not be as important that we first thought, or we might actually see that, hey, one of these secondary personas is even more important. We need to consider that persona as a primary. So I think it's the way our company is evolving, and also the way we are actually taking position now within the digital sales room space, that will also give us more evidence back to who is actually buying this. And who is the persona that we should be targeting even further?
Yeah, that's it. And I guess, you know, like so many things in marketing these days, you have to be flexible, don't you? You know, things have to be able to be tweaked. That comes right down to your marketing plans in general, obviously, but certainly in terms of the fast pace in which categories and markets change these days, I guess you've got to be flexible with everything, and I guess personas is just another thing that you need to be as flexible as possible with, I guess.
Yeah, and for us it still feels like we've done our proper homework now, so we still have a really great foundation, but then obviously you can't just sit and be fat and happy with it and say that, okay, so now we're done. We have to constantly challenge the truth and see if we need to tweak things.
Absolutely. Another thing I was going to talk to you about on the brand building side of things is a little birdie tells me that at GetAccept there is a tangible, discernible effort from you guys to have your employees build their own personal brands on LinkedIn. Is that true?
A little birdie.
Well, we're exchanging sayings, because I've never heard the saying fat and happy before, but I love it.
You haven't? Oh, I thought that was...
No, we don't say that too much over here, although I'm getting very fat and happy in my
But
old age.
You understand the meaning, right? I love that expression.
Absolutely.
No, but that's true. Yes, we do. We have an internal, what we call ambassador program. So everyone who wants to, there's no you have to, but everybody that wants to can be a GetAccept ambassador. And if you choose to be a GetAccept ambassador, we enroll them in a LinkedIn ambassador program where we actually have reoccurring meetings for inspiration, meetings where we feed employees with ideas on what to post about, or trends in the market, or listen to this podcast or join this webinar to be inspired. All things to actually give inspiration, but also I would say the ambassadors that have raised their hands saying that they want to be part of this, they are also fantastic content creators. So they more or less create 80% of their content themselves, and it's very personal, and it's very authentic. Once again, like, we're not forcing anybody to do this. It's just fully up to yourself if you want to, and if you want to, there is support to get. And it's been you know, extremely successful, and actually something that I was surprised by when I joined GetAccept, because I've never been at a company where people are so... Where there are so many people within the company that are so passionate about talking about the brand, being the brand, putting the brand forward through their own personal accounts.
And do you were mentioning how much of a hiring spree you've been on within the marketing team. Do you Just part of the hiring process, do you look for people, I'm not saying it's necessarily a deal breaker, but do you look for people who have that ability to build that personal brand, and does that make a difference to your hiring process?
No, I wouldn't say that we look for that as a criteria. I haven't even asked that kind of question, like, do you want to build your own brand, or do you want to be part of, in building our brand? So no, I wouldn't say that. But if many of, you know, the ones coming into our recruitment process have obviously seen us, and that is quite clear that once again 2.5 years ago, we didn't have at all the employer branding that we have today, and that actually plays a big part in us attracting talents in a, you know, way different today than we did 2.5 years ago. So I would rather say that it adds to that than it's us actually asking in the recruitment process if they want to be part of it.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And do you have kind of internal targets around that side of things for kind of success, or is this purely an exercise that you obviously see the value in it, and if people want to do it, that's great, but you're not kind of putting any discernible metrics against it?
We do support each individual to set their own targets on an individual level if they want to. So for example, a personal target could be, I want to increase my follower base with X percent, or I want to reach people in the US in or Germany or the Nordics, or I want to have this and that, this or that engagement rate, for example. And if they do set these kind of targets, our social media manager can also help and support in ways to reach that or improve that. From a marketing perspective, I would say that the ambassador program is part of our overall, building our overall reach. So of course we measure that, but we don't put any targets on the individual people to help out with that global target, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating. You know, it is absolutely a modern kind of, well, I say modern, I'm even making myself sound old there using the word modern, but it's a very contemporary way of marketing, but so relevant in the B2B space especially, because LinkedIn is such an active B2B tool.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there's so much that have changed with LinkedIn the last 3-4 years. At my last company, we put a lot of effort into posting from the company account, for example. I mean, lots of companies still do that. I'm not saying that that is wrong, but what you can definitely see is that the traction or the engagement you get from the account posts is not even, you know, near the engagement you would get if you choose certain individuals to post the same content, for example.
People by people.
And I mean, that's the way it is. Yeah
that's exactly it. And I'm going right back to your sales days, I'm sure you know. Yeah,
exactly. Sure. So
I've just got a couple of questions left, because I'm quite conscious I'm taking up quite a bit of your time here, but I just wanted to, so you've obviously been at the CMO helm for a little while now. I just wondered, since you've taken on that CMO role, what do you feel kind of makes an effective marketing leader in this B2B SaaS world? Are there any kind of particular unique skills or traits that you found that you need to kind of develop to be a really effective leader in this space?
I think to me, the overall skill is, you know, business understanding, business acumen, understanding the whole picture, what builds growth for a company, and how does different parts of the organization connect to actually, you know, fuel that growth. Being obviously customer centric is also super important if you're within marketing, but also understanding sales and understanding product. And I think the reason why I enjoy the CMO role that much is actually because I have that broad background. Like, I come from sales, I've done product management, I've done business development. So I have a fair understanding of all these areas and how they connect and how we can all build on that to actually build the overall growth of the company. So to me, that is the most important skill set you need as a CMO. But then obviously you have to have a certain level of marketing knowledge as well. But obviously I'm not a specialist. I'm a generalist within that field. And to me, it's also super important that you have an understanding as a CMO for your strengths that you have, but more importantly, maybe your gaps, and how can you actually build a team around that so that you as a marketing leader with your team can actually create the magic that you're setting out to create. So definitely an understanding of your own strengths and weaknesses is also a skill set that you need to have, because obviously you can't know it all. I think the overall business understanding is definitely critical.
I've heard a couple of one thing I saw on LinkedIn and another thing that a client said to me yesterday. So basically, and both marketing leaders, VPs of marketing, about this not necessarily disparity, but this gap between the fact that marketing is a science and an art, and some marketeers very much, their strength is very much in the numbers side of things, the metrics, understanding the bottom line, and that side of things, and others maybe slightly more on the creative side. Do you lean one way more than the other in particular, or not, or kind of straddle the two?
I'm definitely on the numbers, the business, the growth side of things, and then I have, I would say I have a lot of ideas, and I constantly challenge myself to, be curious, learn the next thing, once again trying to be constantly being inspired by other marketeers and so forth, and then I'm always throwing all these ideas at my team, and then I know that they have more the creative power to take that and just turn that into something really, really, really great. And maybe it's not my job to actually do that. My job is to be the one that sets the direction, that sets the strategy, and that understands how marketing is part or takes part of building the growth for the company. And then they are much better at understanding how do we turn that into marketing activities. The engine.
Makes a lot of sense. And I think that's where a lot of great marketing leaders are particularly strong, because they're the ones that have the board level conversations about budgets, about performance, about metrics. Absolutely makes a lot of sense to me. Frida, thank you so much for this. I really, really appreciate this conversation. It's been such a great experience chatting with you. I've got one more question to finish on, which is something that we ask all of our guests on The Changemakers, which is there a particular project or campaign or anything from your extensive career in this world of telecoms and technology that you're particularly proud of more than any other?
That's the most difficult question, isn't it?
A lot of people say that.
I can imagine. But I think the most recent thing that I'm extremely proud of is the way that I actually built the marketing team at GetAccept. The fact that when I joined, we had just brought in our first A-series round of investment, and as I told you before, they were three people in the marketing team, and we were, very much a sales-led company, and part of the next step of the journey was to go from sales-led to marketing-led, and that was the timing when I joined the company. So being the driver in building and scaling the marketing team from three people to the 25 that we are today, but also, of course, then taking the company from sales-led to marketing-led, and now being a big part in taking the company to product-led is, to me, definitely something that I'm proud of, but also something that I find extremely fun and interesting. And it excites me doing it.
And are you growing the team even more? Is the team still growing?
The team is still growing, but definitely not at the same extent as the two last years. I will add a couple of more people to the team this year, but I also look forward to having more of a stabilized base this year so that we can even more so focus on nailing the digital sales room position.
Perfect. Brilliant. Well, I wish you the very best of luck with that and all your future endeavors. And thank you so much for joining me on the Changemakers. It's been a brilliant conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. It was fun.